When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Psst, hey, you're not supposed to be getting this, but it's like free HBO week on Daily Tech News Show. So we're giving everybody all of our special bonus coverage, no matter whether you're a patron or not. Well, it doesn't matter what level you're on. So when I thank the co-executive producers and Up later, just know that, you know, we snuck this to you just so you could hear. This is what people get every month at those levels. Enjoy. Welcome to the Monthly Rewind Show, where we look at old Daily Tech News Show rundowns from the past 5 years ago and talk about some of the stories we thought were important back then and whether we still think they're important today. We are looking at 2017 because we're in a new year. Joining me, of course, is Sarah Lane.
Hello.
Roger Chang.
Greetings.
And Scott Johnson.
Hello.
Sarah, we were talking before we started, like 2017 feels more recent than 2016 did somehow. It's weird.
Yeah, I was looking through some stories like, oh, yeah, this feels recent.
Even though we always do 5 years ago.
You're right.
There's got to be a reason for that, right? Like our sensibility of time.
Yeah.
I don't think it's us. I think it's just that are we hitting like a plateau a little bit?
Well, I think sometimes things that are introduced 5 years ago are a little bit more relevant now.
But they were 5 years ago last year.
I know.
Are we is this a evidence of the slowdown of tech innovation? They're like, not much has
I think we moved over a changeover in how the technology landscape has, the business has shifted over the past.
There's also the fact, and this doesn't regard the stories, but there's also the fact that our brains still kind of feel like it's 2021, even though it's 2022, but we're looking at a lineup.
It's 2022.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. And
so we're looking at a lineup that says 2017. Yeah. That only feels 4 years ago, not 5 years ago.
Yeah, you could also argue that 2020 and 2021 were less about innovation and more about adaptation of technology. So it's possible that
that's another good point. The entire world paused for 2 years. That could also affect.
Yeah, like things still got announced and done.
Still
but
somewhat paused.
Yeah, there was the great pause of 2020 happened. And I don't know. That's probably it now that you say it.
Technopause.
Yeah. Well,
technopause.
Speaking of the stories of January of 2017, of course, it was CES. CES still going strong. So there are some of those stories. But this actually jumped out at me as something that I remember as being fairly recently, even though it was 5 years ago. A new law went into effect in France establishing a worker's right to disconnect. Companies with more than 50 employees must establish hours when staff could not send or answer email, or at least wouldn't have to be able to. The measure was part of a larger controversial package of labor law changes. I feel like that was just yesterday.
Oh, that's funny. This one feels older to me. This feels like, oh, right. I remember they did that a long time ago.
And I feel like it was like almost still going on, really.
I mean, the debate about it is still going on for sure.
Yeah.
That's not new. I've got one from January 24th. FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai took over. Tom Wheeler stepped down on Friday, and the following Tuesday, Ajit Pai began his, I guess, about 5-year reign, because it's 4-year reign. Yeah. Because he got replaced just about a year ago as we were recording this. So Pai was an honors program trial attorney on the telecommunications task force in the U.S. DOJ's antitrust division from 1998 to 2001, an associate general counsel for Verizon until 2003, when he returned to government working for a U.S. Senate subcommittee on oversight in the courts and for the Department of Justice and FCC. In April 2011, he went to work for a law firm called Jenner and Block, and was nominated to the FCC by President Obama that year and was sworn in on May 14th, 2012. So he'd been a commissioner and he was promoted to be the chairman of the commission.
Interesting.
And now he's
not. His tenure was overshadowed by a large novelty coffee mug.
Mug. I forgot about that. I don't know. Right. Overshadowed, maybe overstated.
That's
emblematic of his tenure was a very, very large that. Reese's coffee mug. I totally forgot about that. Yeah,
just completely spaced that. On the, let's see, the day here would have been the 14th. And this is interesting because I thought this never came to market. Apparently, it not only came to market, but did really well, or at least is there still. HTC announced its standalone VR headset called the Vive Focus. For the record, they're already at third edition of this thing. It runs on Snapdragon 835 processor, uses inside-out position tracking and 6 degrees of movement. Let's see. HTC did not announce screen resolution or price at the time, blah, blah, blah. So they did this. They had a headset called the Daydream, which was going to be the big new thing. They canceled that, and then they worked on this. I thought it never happened, but I went and looked up Vive.com, and sure enough, they got a 5K resolution Vive Focus 3, masterful all-in-one VR for $1,300.
Wow.
What a steal.
And they claim it's like, let's see, developers.com says Vive Focus 3 is a standalone virtual reality headset for professionals. HTC offers an ecosystem for better integration on the headset within a company. And they all the stuff in here is like focused on, you know, work stuff. This guy's building a motor, so he's got like a fake motor in front of him. This guy's doing healthcare stuff. So clearly this thing's positioned at those markets, which are valid, but they're not so worried about games and junk like that. So there you go. Vive 3, or Vive Focus 3, the hot thing you didn't know came out.
Well, you know, one of the things I didn't appreciate was back in January, the 12th, the Korea Herald has sources that say Samsung is working on a foldable phone for a release the autumn of 2017. The phone would open up into a 7-inch tablet.
What?
And the Herald sources says
Samsung
expects it'll never happen.
100,000 units in the third
quarter. How would that even work?
See, what would it look like?
This is a real good example of something that still feels perfectly new, right?
Yes.
I
mean,
that was 5 years ago that we got the first rumor on that?
I thought it was like a lot more recent than that.
I mean, it certainly was more recent that they released it, but I didn't realize we were even talking about it that far back.
But I will say the past 2 years have been sort of a stasis point where it's like things that you thought happened long ago or relatively recently happened a lot further, because I remember going to CES and we did see a foldable product the following year, not this year, but the following 2018.
Oh, right. The, what was the name? Not Royal. Was it Royal? It was a screen technology maker.
Then there was literally a huddle of people around the table, and I was trying to get my big face in there.
Normal.
And but like, we haven't been to CES in 2 years, and so it's just really weird to me.
Yeah,
it's pretty odd.
Well, back on January 3rd, 2017, Ford announced plans to build a range of electric and hybrid vehicles over the next 5 years, including a 4,300-mile range electric SUV.
4,300?
Good thing we all have that. Yeah. At the time.
It must be 430, not 4,300. Yeah. I think that's a typo.
Well, right, because that would be like
that. You would literally
the span of the U.S.
You could drive from Alaska to Florida.
I mean, car companies make crazy promises sometimes, so who knows?
But at the time, Ford also said it was working on a hybrid F-150 truck.
Yeah. That
including a fully electric version to debut in 2021, along with a hybrid Mustang to debut in 2020, and a fully autonomous electric car to debut in 2021 as well. Ford said at the time it planned high volume production for that autonomous car, and the cars would be built in Flat Rock, Michigan.
I was about to give them full credit of like, hey, man, the F-150 pretty much hit the date. Good job. And then they had to go and promise a fully autonomous car.
the Mustang was pretty close to that, too.
Yeah.
What's fascinating is the pre-sales.
4,300 mile range. Can you imagine?
I would
I'd buy one today.
I literally wouldn't have to charge it for like half a year. But
where am I going?
Everyone knew it was headed that direction, but that the electric F-150 was sold out like immediately, like pre-orders, just like the Chevy electric Silverado did. I
know a lot of folks
huge untapped market
are excited for theirs.
Yeah,
I don't know when they're going to get them. But
this year, the Silverado, the Chevy one is the big shiny one because everybody's like, F-150, that's old news.
That's already sold out. I want one I can get.
I've got one from January 24th, January 24th. The Amazon-produced Manchester by the Sea became the first movie from a streaming service to be nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture.
Oh.
Amazon got 6 total nominations related to the movie for Oscars. Netflix, of course, was the first streaming company to receive an Oscar nomination for the documentary The Square, in 2014.
Oh, not the squid.
Days, they're just riddled with them. That's all it is now.
Yeah.
It's just crazy how much that's
5 years ago, it was like, ooh, a streaming company. I mean, it's a really good movie, and they released it in theaters, but it's made by Amazon. Great.
Now,
all like Roma won Best Picture for Netflix. Like,
what's the Irishman? Was it the other? Or
Irishman didn't win, but it got nominated. I think it won some Oscars. It didn't win Best Picture, though.
But yeah, Manchester, is that the one with Casey Affleck?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Casey Affleck and
and Manchester.
It's not a real uplifter.
No.
It's not a feel good movie.
Not really. No.
It that way, no.
I actually kind of forgot about it, but I remember liking the movie.
It's a good movie. Yeah, don't get me. But it's not a like pick me up.
Now it's almost unusual to hear. If you had an Academy Awards list or even Emmys list that wasn't riddled with streaming based films or TV shows,
like Golden Globes and Emmys. And
it'd be crazy.
Yeah,
it'd be insane dominating. Not to see that.
I mean, now it's like you don't even blink. But at the time, it was like, whoa, look at Amazon.
That was only 5 years ago, too.
What, are you gonna get an Oscar?
I mean, they won't win. A streaming service couldn't win.
Yeah, they can't win.
Right.
Yes. Back on the 14th of that month, you guys talked about Star Wars Battlefront 2 and the controversy over EA and all of their weird microtransactions in it. And they decided to slash hero costs after the fan backlash. That would actually eventually lean into them not having those charge anything, and you just unlock them. It was a huge PR nightmare, one of the biggest in the industry has ever seen. And you know what? My game's pretty good now. You get it on Game Pass. People play it. There's a ton of people in there. Battlefront 2 actually came into its own, but it will always be remembered as 27's video game nightmare for PR. It was just bad. It's really bad.
Epically bad launch to the game.
Oh, yeah. And the game was, I mean, there was nothing wrong with the game. It was just so tone deaf as to what players wanted in terms of, you know,
what was
monetization.
What was Blizzard's with Diablo, the chest that you could buy items?
No, Diablo. So you're thinking Diablo 3's real life auction house is what it was.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah, and they pulled that for similar reasons. That was in 2012. Well, they didn't pull it fully until 2014. But yeah, there's been a couple of these moments, and most of it was based on, like, this was mostly based on the hype brought on by another Blizzard game, Overwatch, which had loot boxes. And so everybody was trying to loot box up their games and get creative with it and make more money with it. And it really started to backfire. And this was kind of the height of that. And it just crashed and burned. Nobody wanted anything to do with it. So it's actually good now. I mean, right now, outside of the mobile market, which is still riddled with horrible micro stuff, mainstream gaming has kind of evened out a bit more than they used
there
to.
There was a concern that there would be nothing but microtransactions in games that would quote-unquote ruin the gaming experience because you're literally tripping over one advertisement over another.
And that is a good cautionary tale, which is one of the reasons I like doing this like 5-year look back of like whenever you hear like it will always now be like this and it will ruin X, that's probably not true because things always swing back.
Evolve.
You've ruined technology news.
Yep.
Yep.
On the 10th, go ahead.
No.
Oh, on January 10th, Tuesday of 2017, we did a discussion about ZeniMax Media getting out it with versus the Oculus VR trial that started today in Dallas. So we had all these notes about it. But what's interesting is I totally forgot this even happened because it was big back then. But
what was it? You got to tell us what happened.
Oh, so it was the I was questioning the virtual reality lawsuit where there was claims by ZeniMax Media that John Carmack and his colleagues that were working at ZeniMax created the transformational technology in the Rift prototype by adding hardware
to it. And then took it over and stole it. That's right. Okay,
I do remember that.
Yeah, I forgot about that. So that's weird now because I don't know what John Carmack's even doing.
And that just was sort of, that just kind of died, right?
Isn't Carmack still at Meta?
I think he might be. I'm not sure.
Unless he recently stepped down. But I will double check that. Where is ZeniMax now?
ZeniMax is still, that's Microsoft. That's part of that Bethesda buyout.
Right. ZeniMax isn't even on its own anymore. He's still working for he's in his advisory role, which is always what he was in
consulting chief technology officer, and also he founded his Armadillo Aerospace company, which doesn't really make money, but it's a thing he likes to do. Carmack's a really interesting dude.
He's kind of like Lord Bishop from Origin. Remember that guy?
Lord British, yeah.
Yeah, he did all the Ultima games.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Microsoft sued Facebook?
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why UnitedHealthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Ooh,
oh, man.
That would be the trial of the...
Like, how would this have gone down? Or would it have gone down if Microsoft had already owned ZeniMax?
That's a great question.
Honestly, I think it would have been just some sort of something public, but then they would resolve it behind the scenes.
It might not have even made it
deal.
Public, but yeah, it would have been a call from Satya to Mark. Hey, let's work this out.
Hey, John, what you doing there, buddy?
I'm sure John didn't mean to do anything wrong. That's not how Satya Nadella sounds at all. I'm not trying to do an imitation of Satya Nadella.
Well, on January 5th, 2017, and this would have probably been an official announcement later in the month, Vine announced it would shut down January 17th.
The saddest day Scott Johnson is.
For the Vine faithful, tough stuff. At the time, the company said users would no longer be able to retrieve their archives after the 17th. The app would change names to Vine Camera and only be able to send 6.5 second looping video to Twitter or to the phone's camera roll.
Which no longer exists. That app is now.
Yeah, that didn't work. That didn't last very long.
That didn't last at all. I will say this, though. I think it's incredibly short-sighted of them. I think at that point, they should have and could have known that video was going to still be tip of the spear business and that they had something with Vine that nothing else had really competed with. And by dropping that, they just left this whole market open to all those other apps, and TikTok is an example of one that succeeded. They could have done it. Could have been them.
But this is kind of the whole argument of hindsight. So it's 2020. Yeah, now we can see it. But I distinctly remember people were really scratching their head, like, there's something here, but how do we monetize it? How do we make it into an actual business?
Yeah, no, it's not easy.
The counter argument is, it was Vine a golden egg that they smashed, or was Vine Friendster? And Twitter had the foresight to say, we're too early. Instead of losing money, let's just shut it down.
I mean, Vine was TikTok.
Well, yeah. I know. In my analogy here, Vine is Friendster and TikTok is Facebook. Yes, you could argue, like, well, Friendster should have become Facebook, but it didn't, because it was, wrong formula or ahead of its time. But it was super popular, so maybe Twitter was like, yeah, this might turn into something someday. And it's definitely got something, but not yet.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. It's funny because I think, and I agree with you, but that if we're looking at that chronology, that would make TikTok MySpace, because
Snapchat is MySpace.
I like it. That's good. No, there you go. I was trying to find it and I couldn't think of it. That's exactly.
Although Snapchat way more successful than MySpace.
Yeah, it's still going. I don't know. These things are hard to compare. There have to be people who just regret not being there when the time was right. I don't know.
I know what you're saying, though. I was just making the counter argument. There was something about Vine that was really successful when they shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
It was still being used.
Well, and that's why it upset so many people. Yeah, yeah. People were like, what are you doing? It turns out that the method of, creating creative stuff is very alive and well. And, in hindsight, I don't know why Twitter shut Vine down, but the company certainly at the time took some Vine execs and said, please be part of Twitter, of which some of them still are. And, in real executive roles, but we don't know what to do with this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird thing. I don't know. Twitter's not, what's the other one? Periscope.
Twitter has also bought a lot of companies and done nothing with them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Eventually something sticks when you throw it against the wall.
Because
spaghetti.
Two of my favorite accounts I follow on TikTok, by the way, are Vine compilations from old Vines. That's how much Vine still seeps into it. But
they should call it Tarzan, swinging from Vine to Vine.
I like what you've done there.
The 13th of January in 2017, Nintendo announced its Switch game console would arrive March 3rd for $299. For $299. Right.
Two months until we get to actually talk about the launch. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yep.
But this is their marketing or their PR release. You'll get a console with 32 gigs of memory on board. One bundle includes two gray Joy-Con controllers. The other one comes with a red and blue controller, and that set will be referred to as Neon. You can play the Switch in three different ways. The TV mode, where you just sit down on your couch and you play it on your TV. Handheld mode, where you take the system out of the dock, play as a portable system. And tabletop mode, where players can throw back the tablet's kickstand and rest it on the table, detaching the controllers from some solo or even multiplayer action.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, it just has a 1280 by 720 6-inch screen.
I'm going to guess that my analysis was, I don't know, it doesn't sound that different from the Wii U. They're still trying to be too many things at once. I wonder if it'll succeed.
Remember what I said, and this is what I said. Back at Revision 3, I told Zach, who was running our game portion of our content, I said, there's going to be a time where Nintendo is just going to take what they've done with the Game Boy, the DS, and eventually the 3DS, and then what they've done on the console side and just marry it together so they'll have one product. So they don't have to support two different tracks. They have one product that they can focus all the games. So you'll never have a cut down version of a Super Mario or of a Pokemon.
It's trying to be too many things at once. It'll never succeed.
I remember people saying that. I was super positive on it, mainly because it felt like if they didn't make this work, they were going to be done because the Wii U was such a tanker. And this ended up being such a wild success. I don't think I predicted it. I just think I wanted it to be. And part of that was, I don't know, I was intrigued when they first showed, hey, this is a modular thing and you can plug it into a dock or take it on your own or put these controllers off. And like they really sold me on the usability of the thing. So I don't know. Like, I don't know what they do next. Like, what's their follow-up?
Well, it was the GameCube. Ugh. Into the Wii, great. Into the Wii U, into the Switch, great. Their strategy seems to be like just never make another one. Just keep making switches.
So basically, it's like Intel's TikTok.
Yeah, yeah.
On their like, their
let's
chip
avoid
design.
The next and just keep.
Well,
making
you gotta switch. You gotta remember though, GameCube, which I actually really like the GameCube. It had its moments, but that came out at an era where they were still in this three-way fight for domination of the actual console market, and they were still competing on tech and specs and junk like that. But then that ended. And they went, let's do something weird. And I think that marks the time where Nintendo went, all right, we're going over here. See you guys later. We don't care what you're doing. And they really don't.
Yeah,
I think
that was, I mean, you know, hindsight, of course, it's the right call comparatively with, but I think letting go of that idea of that mindset of we are in a three horse race with the Microsoft, with the Sony at one point, Sega. And then just saying like, hey, we're going to make a product that people are going to want to buy regardless of you know how or how we define them, and you know it's going to work. It's going to work great.
Yeah, I hope whatever they do next is.
No, what they're going to have is they're going to have a strap, and you strap the Switch to your face, and it'll be like a VR.
Metaverse? You mean metaverse?
Metaverse? You mean metaverse? Yeah, just say metaverse. That'll cover all of it. Yeah, right. That'll just fix everybody's problems.
This is real important, folks. January 25th, Mark Zuckerberg shot down rumors of a presidential bid. BuzzFeed asked him about it. BuzzFeed News. No, I'm focused on building our community at Facebook and working on the Chan Zuckerberg initiative. Rumors of a possible Zuckerberg presidential run have surrounded his plan to visit 30 states asking folks about their lives. Remember
this,
that though?
Always,
it was so weird that he did that.
Always reminded me of Facebook just being like, why don't we say that he's going to run for president? And then he could say, no, I'm just a man of the people.
But well, what's interesting is the
unless
political...
you're into that. That's how I always felt like it was like no, I don't want to be president unless you're like
cool. Yeah, unless it actually garners a lot of positive attention.
I mean, I remember the political climate at that time, and everyone was like, "Oh, really? This is what
we
need."
Like, it was like that's weird, but could be weirder.
Yeah,
and it was.
Well, I remember thinking that at the time, oh, that's interesting. But I don't think we quite had the irritation level we have right now with Facebook or Mark Zuckerberg that we do today.
It was building, but it hadn't reached this level.
It's definitely building.
It did have its first major, you know, public stoosh back with the campaign leading up to the election in 2016, right? Mm-hmm. There was this all these rumors and hearsay, and
no, that's where there was the beginning of what would
the
be
thing
there,
was, and probably. This has always been my contention on the Cambridge Analytica stuff is that a lot of that was people looking for an explanation and then attaching more to the story than was there, because I think it's important that what Scott noted in January of 2017, this story didn't get like laughed out and like what a horrible, it was like, I don't know, maybe he will, would that be so bad? Like it was a crazy story, but if it was done now, people would be like, what
was,
a horrible
it was
idea.
Yeah, it was being taken seriously as like if this were to happen, how do we all feel about it? Now it would be like, are you kidding?
For the like Facebook is the one that ruined democracy to really build it, that didn't happen immediately.
Yeah, but it did seem to some people, it was like, well, wait, we had an actor in the 80s. We got a guy from reality show now. Why not a tech executive? Like, it didn't seem crazy.
Yeah, it was like, I guess that's the next step, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, like, the idea that we, the people, jump to that as, he must be. That's, we're the problem. That's what I'm saying. Not
just
us, but,
vote for Scott Johnson for president. And everything
That's
will
right.
be fine.
Everything will be fine, you guys. I promise. That's my first promise.
You have a daily presidential cartoon.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be great. First. Yeah.
It's what the country needs. on January 5th, Phil Schiller, Apple Senior VP of Worldwide Marketing, was talking to The Verge about milestones that the company made in 2016. Notably, $3 billion in revenue in December of 2016 alone. That was its biggest month ever. But can we guess what was the most downloaded app of the year and the fifth highest grossing app in the App Store in 2016?
Pokemon?
Yes. Pokemon Go. Yeah. Apple at the time didn't share details of how much of that came from subscriptions, but had a pretty bang up fourth quarter. Chinese market grew 90% year over year. And coincidentally, on Thursday of this week, back in 2017, Apple and the New York Times announced that the New York Times app had been removed from the Chinese App Store almost around Christmas in December on request of the government. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've worked that out since then.
Yeah.
In so many different ways. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had some time.
This one isn't that big of a story, but it reminded me of a thing that used to be kind of a competitor, and then this killed it. Razer, the game hardware maker, acquired Nextbit on January 27th, makers of the Robin smartphone.
I don't even remember the Robin smartphone.
The Robin was a like cloud and an internal storage merger. It kind of had its own operating system. It was going to operate as a standalone business under its own management, under Razer. And Robin was, you know, it was a cult classic, I guess. But it had a passionate following, and it just sort of faded away after Razer bought it.
Yeah, and then it became the Razer phone.
Well, I don't, and you can buy one of those today?
No. Oh, no, I didn't say it was successful.
Yeah.
But Razer essentially killed it once they bought out the Nextbit, right? And then they tried to fold it into the Razer phone. Or am I totally
I'm sure they built the Razer phone on top of tech that they got from Nextbit, but I don't recall all the details on that.
I totally forgot about the revival in general, but there we are.
Yeah.
Hey, do you guys remember Drip, Kickstarter Drip?
Is that the
sort of remote?
So I remember this because we were going to try it. Dave and I were exploring it. Anyway, it was an alternative to Patreon. Patreon had taken off over the last few years before this. And they were like, hey, we can do that. So they launched Drip. It was a new funding project. Based on the company Drip. Kickstarter acquired back in 2016, so they bought them and then, I don't know, did stuff with it. So it was going to work just like Patreon, really, and others like Steady and Flatter, which I'm not sure those are still around or not, but they ended up canning it pretty quick. I don't remember this lasting very long.
You were one of them, very enthusiastic about the idea, and like, man, a Kickstarter, you know, with Kickstarter juice behind them, Patreon might be in trouble.
It made sense, right? It was like, oh, Kickstarter, they fund projects. Why wouldn't they fund creators? Mm-hmm. It just seemed like a natural fit. And then I think it went away. Let's see.
You know, Kickstarter in general at one point was like, do you need crowdfunding? This is what you do. And now, you know, Patreon is obviously a very different business model, more subscription-based. But I don't see a lot of Kickstarter projects anymore. I know that they exist. I know that the company exists. But, I see a lot more GoFundMe, really, than anything.
I hear of Kickstarter. I read about projects and then find out they're on Kickstarter. Whereas back 5 years ago, you read about Kickstarters, right? Like, oh, there's a Kickstarter project. Today it feels like the Kickstarter aspect of it is a commodity, right? That isn't what's special. It could be on Kickstarter, could be on GoFundMe, could be on Indiegogo, could be on its own thing. Like there's, you know, that part of the business has just kind of leveled out. Kickstarter's still really successful, but being on Kickstarter doesn't carry the buzz that it used to.
No, but it still is kind of your place, though. Like,
it's,
you know, nobody
still very vibrant, has lots of stuff on it. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like eBay. It's just like your default.
In fact, yeah. And I don't mean to say that a Kickstarter project is nobody cares anymore. It's just you have a lot of other options and they're not all the same way to crowdfund a project that you care about. But at one point it was like it was only Kickstarter.
Yeah. You only went to Indiegogo if you were a little shady.
Yeah.
I remember there were a lot of media like I'm doing a film or I'm doing a book or like that was kind of like a more creative thing.
By the way, it went up till 2019. October of 2019 is when Drip officially died. So
not that long ago.
For the record.
It dripped away.
Yeah, dripped off into nothingness.
Ah, they called a plumber. All right. Any other last minutes that you guys were holding on before we wrap up here? I don't have any more myself.
This is super quick, but just to give you an idea of what, you know, was kind of new and cool 5 years ago, EvLeaks had spotted a leaked blog post from Qualcomm on January 3rd describing a 10 nanometer Snapdragon 835 processor.
10. So huge.
With 25% faster graphics, VR optimization, and 40% less power usage under load.
Ooh.
Even Intel does 10 nanometers now.
And I don't mean to read that like I'm disparaging this. It's just, you know, this would be something that if something had these specs now, you'd be like, all right.
Yeah.
It's not that great.
Not that isn't you
not,
know what
not, I'm, not in 2022
no
you
no
be
no
like
I,
super I you know excited I, about it
I'm constantly amazed at how used to new technology we get where I look at my phone and think like man this thing's too slow or doesn't take great pictures when the last you know when I remember in high school I was using a corded phone connected to a thing connected to the kitchen wall I can play any games
I was
on
as
that.
Well yes.
That's just playing word games with a friend.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for supporting us, co-executive producers and up. We very, very much appreciate it. Please spread the word. Let folks know. And join us next week. Or next week? Yeah, maybe next week. Probably in a few weeks. Join us in February as we look back at the February 2017 lineups. Until then, everybody, please enjoy yourselves.
I love that.
Enjoy that life.
Enjoy yourselves.
Love you.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.